Welcome to part two of our conversation with Tony Filosi and Darla Jackson about decoding messages from the gray. Give us some of the backstory. What was known factually to the authorities and such about this Jane Doe that was found stabbed?
Okay. Her body was discovered by a man out in the woods June 4th, 1969. He immediately called the police. She had probably been there between 3 weeks and a month, so she was pretty badly decomposed at that point. An autopsy was done locally. All autopsies were performed at the hospitals at that time. And it was determined that she was very young, late teens, early 20s. She had been stabbed multiple times. She was small. She had reddish hair. None of her clothing was found. She was nude, but there were some fragments of a blouse and what appeared to be a man's sweater found with her, and a meal ticket from a restaurant in the Cincinnati, Ohio area. And that was pretty much it. And at that point, the police began trying to find a missing young girl. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, with the limited technology and communication that was in Harlan County in the 60s, they did, you know, the best they could to get this information out. Some of the media picked up on it, not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But now I did find a newspaper article in California that briefly said a body was found in Harlan County. Absolutely no leads whatsoever, no matches, no nothing, and nobody came looking for her. And that was basically the case for 50 years, 40 years, 50 years. So in 1999, 2000, when this kind of came back into my life, what I was basically told is this was a true cold case. This, the police report, there wasn't really even anything in the state capitol in Frankfort, Kentucky about this. This was, we use the term cold case loosely. This is a true cold case. Mm-hmm. It stopped basically in Harlan County and never went anywhere else.
So that's
basically the circumstances. Yeah. You know, fast forward 2000.
So you get to 2000, you have the family member that's having these experiences. Mm-hmm. How are they getting these experiences? Is it dreams? Is it, are they just kind of, you know, sitting there and then boom? I like to describe it almost like downloads sometimes, where just information is suddenly there. What are they picking up and how are they picking it up?
My Uncle James moved right beside of this girl's grave. He was a young adult when this happened, so he remembered it. He remembered it well. He claimed that all of the above, basically everything that you said, he seemed to have gotten some information just popping into his head. He had dreams, and then at the first thing that he said that actually happened to him is that he awoke one morning. And this young girl was standing in his bedroom, peering out the window. He says he saw physically what she looked like before she passed away.
Wow. What's going through his mind at this point? And obviously you have to speak for him from what you know. But when he's sitting there and he sees this woman, does he know about this cold case? Does he have any idea that there's this grave of this woman that is just outside, you know, his home? Or what is he thinking thus far?
He was well aware of this case. even when I was 99. He said that shortly after moving in right beside of the grave, that he actually was just walking around his yard exploring and looks over and sees the grave. He says he walks over to it and immediately knows who this is, because the grave marker says unidentified girl 1969. Wow. So there was no doubt who this was. He said that he felt absolute depression, sadness. He said that it just kind of overwhelmed him, these feelings, when he saw the grave of this girl. And my uncle, who's now deceased, he had no spirituality. He believed in nothing. He was afraid of nothing. He did not believe in the paranormal. He believed in nothing. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a shock when suddenly my Uncle James is informing me that he is getting psychic messages, seeing ghosts, and having what he thinks is kind of prophetic dreams, or dreams giving him knowledge. This is totally out of yeah. character for him. So it was a pretty amazing event in itself that my Uncle James would connect like this with this young girl.
What are you guys as the family thinking with that pretext being said of his outlook on the spiritual world and ghosts and things of that nature, and suddenly he's telling you that he's having these experiences? Are you all thinking maybe we should get a mental evaluation done here? Maybe there's something that's going on that we need to get him some help for? Or are you thinking maybe there's something that is trying to communicate with through him?
Well, my Aunt Loretta, who is my youngest aunt, we're super close. She called me and she said, let me, I've got one for you. Here you go. James says he's being contacted from the dead and all this. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I will be honest. Our first thought was he killed her.
Him.
He killed her.
And this is his way of coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's finally affecting him. He can't deal with the guilt anymore. And he's telling us this crazy story. So he can get it off his chest.
Yeah.
Because he would have been early mid 20s yeah. when this happened.
Wow.
I can't consider, James was never considered a pillar of society. I mean, he ran with a rough bunch. He got in trouble. I mean, so we kind of thought he was guilty, to the point that I said, James, you're going to get yourself arrested saying all this stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's fine. I will be proven innocent. I want to be the first suspect because I'm innocent. I want this solved. So the more he spoke to me that way, I started thinking, you know, no, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
And now I firmly believe and no, he did not do it.
So how did that progress then with him having these you know, communications, these images, this information coming to him, and then this going down the road of identifying who this is and what happened?
James contacted Loretta and told her to contact me. But at that point, I was very much into genealogy and family research. He knew that I could do research and do it well. I had traced their family history back, I think, about 1,000 years or so. It was just what I was into. I love solving mysteries, and I'm a good researcher. I also had one of the basic forms of internet in my home at that time, which was a dial-up that a lot of people in Harlan County did not have. So I had the internet, I had research ability, and loved to solve mysteries. So he thought of me. So he basically said, okay, here's the information I've gotten from the library and what little I can do. Now you go and solve it. Here's your stuff. Go solve it. So I started trying to do this. I got on the internet. I called the police. I really took the steps I felt that I needed to do. And what I came up with was nothing. At nothing. Nobody was looking for her. She's not on the internet at all. The state police are not, they're not interested. They've got too many crimes happening in 2000 to be worried about something that happened in 69. So I had nothing. All I had was this super ghost story. So I started writing a ghost story about it. And then I thought that was going to be a book, but it was about 40, 50 pages at best. And that's with a lot of pictures. So it was a story.
Sure.
So I started, that is when I truly started becoming interested in true paranormal accounts. I created a book, Harlan County Haunts, and I wanted everything around this story to be true because I didn't ever want anyone to think that my story was fiction.
Sure.
And it was only through that book, the ghost book, Harlan County Haunts, that this case started getting attention. That's when it, and this was probably about 2005, 2006. I searched for about 5 years with nothing. Mm-hmm. And then I was told to write this story. This was my cousin, Ken, I told him this story and he said, well, this is a book. This is a story. This is the best ghost story I've ever heard. Write this story and people will come to you. And sure enough, I wrote and people came and then the people who truly could get the ball rolling, they began helping me and took the lead even and solved this case 17 years later in 16 years later in 2016.
So who started to come forward and what sort of information started to become relevant?
The first thing that happened was a perfect timing. About the time I released this book, a local news station, WYMT Television in Hazard, Kentucky, started doing a weekly series called Mountain Cold Cases. Someone who had read my story contacted the host, the reporter, the journalist doing this show and said, boy, we've got a cold case for you. They don't get any colder than this one. And so a man by the name of Steve Hensley contacted me and said that he wanted to do a segment on this cold case. So that was the first true publicity that this case had gotten in, at that time, it was probably almost 40 years, 37, 38 years. Through that, a man who named Todd Matthews, who works for the National Database of Unidentified and Missing Persons, saw this and immediately contacted me. And he said, we want her in the database. We need this body exhumed. We need DNA. And we got to do this. Mm-hmm. And it took, though, the ball rolling, it rolled very slow. It took about 7 years. 7-8 years to actually get body exhumed, get DNA, find the match, and identify this woman.
So how did they identify her through the DNA? What did they do to trace that to give her an identity?
Well, what I learned was what you typically have to do to get a body exhumed is you have to have potential family members coming forward and saying, we think this is our mm-hmm. family member.
Sure.
That took several years, but in 2014, two families came forward after searching the database, and they said, this is our family member, and they submitted DNA. At that point, you have to exhume the body to try to get DNA for a match. So that is what happened in 2000. As usual, this is the case was relentless. It you got no breaks. I never got one break ever. So the first exhumation, the wrong body was dug up. It was a male.
Oh gosh.
Had it been a female, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It would have just come up a no match. Thank goodness it was a male, and it was obvious. Wrong body. Sorry.
Yeah.
So another exhumation occurred in 2015. The correct body, her body was exhumed. It was a perfect match, as perfect as you can get, 99.7% match to one of the families. And at that point, it took another year because there's a waiting list for all this, for the DNA testing in Texas. September 2015, we learned that the Mountain Jane Doe was Sonja K. Blair Adams from Letcher County, Kentucky. And it was her child. It was her daughter that submitted the DNA. And it was a perfect match.
Wow.
So this young woman was a very young mother. And had a baby at the time of her murder and disappearance.
Did the family pursue trying to find out what happened to her, or were they just, was it one of those things where at that point in time, the authorities just thought, we're never going to figure this out, and it was just kind of dismissed?
No one truly looked for this young woman. No one.
Why is that?
What I have learned is that this Sonja was in a family of total disconnect.
Okay.
She had many siblings with many half siblings, and I don't think any full siblings. Mm-hmm. Her mother roamed a lot. Her mother moved at the time of her disappearance. I think many of her siblings were out of state. Mm-hmm. Her mother lived in Ohio. It was just odd.
Yeah.
She was living with her husband's family at the time, and they just didn't seem to want to know or care what happened to her. They just seemed happy that she was gone.
Which seems very suspect in itself. So,
it does.
So we're able to identify who the woman is, and
yes.
that she has, in fact, you know, this is her, this is her family, this is her daughter who submitted the DNA evidence. Are they then moving in to investigate who killed this woman, or did they ever figure that part out?
That part has never been figured out, and I've always maintained my goal was to find her identity, and I'll let the authorities find her killer.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a murder case. It's an open case right now.
Yeah.
The two suspects are her husband and her brother and his brother that she left her husband for. It was a love triangle.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as her identity was solved, the brother died of a heart attack.
Wow.
They announced her identity and he basically fell over dead. Literally, it was kind of crazy.
Guilty.
Nothing suspect about that.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But, and then the other brother immediately showed the estranged husband.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately produces papers showing that he was in Vietnam.
Okay.
So there's that. They are the two brothers are the suspects.
Sure.
It really points to people who knew her, killed her,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because there was never a missing person report filed for her, mm-hmm. although it was said that there was. Before this, the body had to have been on that mountain about 3 weeks is what was determined. 3 weeks prior to her body being found, her mother and father-in-law filed for adoption, applied for adoption to her child, her infant, and said that the mother had abandoned her. At this point, that girl would have been missing maybe, I'm thinking, a day or two.
Yeah.
It was early May 1969. There are a lot of very odd circumstances, mm-hmm. and no one in the family really wants to discuss it.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's understandable. It does sound very suspicious. You know, it's just accusations and allegations, you know, without any sort of solid evidence. But certainly one could look at that case and go, raise an eyebrow or two. But also, this many years later, I mean, we're talking, you know, almost 40, 50 years after the fact. How deep can you dive into that and get, you know, solid evidence on who may have been the murderer, if they are even still around?
If the murderer is still around, the only way that you could actually, you know, convict someone or at least pinpoint who did it would be a deathbed confession, the person finally coming clean,
yeah.
which I don't think will happen, or some pretty good secondhand information saying, yes, he told me he killed her.
Yeah.
You know, this was a family secret and I have decided to just come clean with it since everyone involved is dead, mm-hmm. something like that. But there is no substantial evidence whatsoever that could actually pinpoint somebody without someone without a confession of some sort.
Yeah.
There's no way to solve it.
I know you said your uncle, hey, who was the one who had these visions and this information has passed on. Was he alive once they had dug into this and had found their identity of the girl?
Unfortunately, no. He died in 2013.
Wow.
He did. There were some people who passed away through this whole thing that I really hate, didn't know, and that was James. He was number one, and the other one was a man by the name of Joe Mahan, who was the coroner, I think, at the time, or at least, no, he was a local funeral home owner who actually had a funeral for this young girl and buried her for free and just got so wrapped up in this case and always wanted it solved. And I visited him until he died in the Harlan nursing home, you know, keeping him updated with everything. And I really wanted to tell James and Joe who this girl was, and I didn't get to tell either one of them.
Why do you think the Jane Doe had picked your uncle of all people? I'm sure people had come and gone through that cemetery over the years and such. Why do you think she chose him specifically to try and communicate through? This is just an opinion question.
Because she knew that he had a niece crazy enough to try to find her for 17 years. Honestly, I don't know. Maybe, truly, maybe.
Yeah.
My uncle was my grandmother's son that I spoke about earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, we come from a long line of people who seem to have these odd gifts.
Yeah.
I'm not saying James was gifted, but he may have had just enough that she could have popped some information through to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was afraid of nothing. So he would have stood right there and experienced everything she'd do, where other people would have probably turned tail and ran.
Yeah. Or
it was just a good circumstance, yeah. I think.
Or stayed silent in fear of, you know, what the consequences could be, because realizing he could fit the profile of a potential suspect, and many would be like, I'm not saying anything because I don't want to get blamed.
And he didn't care. He didn't seem to care.
Maybe she knew that. Again, this is just an opinion question. Do you believe her spirit is at peace now that she's been identified, or do you think she's still out there trying to communicate with someone, still trying to, because I mean, the case isn't completely finished yet. We've identified her, but the killer, you know, could either still be out there or has been deceased, but just to identify and bring someone to justice, whether they're deceased or not, but to have their name associated with, you're the one who did this. Do you think she cares about that? Or do you think she's good, the fact that people now know who she was?
I think it's a mixed. I think during the early 2000s, when we first brought this to light, she was not at rest. And I firmly believe that she poked and prodded me. I never saw her like James, and I never really felt like. I had a dream once that I think I almost tapped into her. But anytime I got lax, something would happen. I mean, she. It was just odd. It was something in me driving me. Other people would experience things, and it just seemed that there was all of this energy. When she was correctly dug up on the side of that mountain, it was almost at that point that things started to calm down, and I felt like she was satisfied, truly, and I don't know why. I seemed calmer. And everything else did too. Is she satisfied? Yes, she's with her daughter. Right now, she is physically with her daughter. Is she completely satisfied? No, she's not. Someone stabbed her. Someone brutally beat her to the point where her front tooth was in her throat. Someone stabbed her multiple times. Threw her on the side of a mountain and left her there to decay. No, she's not satisfied. And I know one thing. I know her daughter is 100% not satisfied. It helped a little bit that she has her mother with her, mm-hmm. and that she's been given a name. But my goal was the identity of Jane Doe. Mm-hmm. Her daughter's goal is the identity of the killer.
That wraps up our conversation with Tony Filosi and Darla Jackson on The Grave Talks. A big thank you to them for sharing their stories with us on our episode. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support and thanks for listening.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.